Chapter 47. They took the ridge a few minutes after midnight, with hardly any opposition. The few Boer sentries made good time down the far slope, and Shaun looked down upon the Boer lagers. The campfires glimmered in an irregular line along the valley. Men stood around them, staring up at the ridge. Shaun scattered them with a dozen lusty volleys, and then yelled, "Cease firing! Eccles, get the men settled in. We're going to have visitors fairly soon." The Boers had built schanzes along the crest, which saved Shaun's men much inconvenience, and within 10 minutes the Maxims were emplaced, and Shaun's 200 unwounded men waited behind walls of rough rock for the Boer counter-attack. This took some time to develop, for the situation necessitated a hurried war council in the valley below. But at last they heard the first stealthy approach of the attackers.
"Here they come, Sergeant Major. Hold your fire, please."
The burghers worked their way up cautiously, and when Shaun could hear their voices whispering among the rocks, he decided they were close enough and discouraged further intimacy with volleyed rifle fire and the use of all his Maxims. The Boers replied with heat, and at the height of the exchange, the Hotchkiss gun joined in from the valley. Its first shell passed but a few feet over Shaun's head, then burst in the valley behind him. The second and third shots dropped neatly among the attacking Boer riflemen, and raised such a howl of protest that the gunners, their efforts not appreciated, maintained an aloof and offended silence for the rest of the night. Shaun had expected a determined night attack, but it soon became clear that Leroux was fully aware of the danger of closely engaging an inferior force in the dark. He contented himself with keeping Shaun awake all night, his burghers taking it in turn to come up and keep the short-range rifle duel going, and Shaun began to have qualms about the wisdom of his offensive. Dawn would find him on a rocky ridge, facing a numerically superior force, with his line anchored at neither end, and short enough to be easily flanked and enfiladed. He remembered Spion Kop, and there was little comfort in the memory. But the alternative was to fall back on the river, and his hackles rose at the thought. Unless relief came soon, defeat was certain. Better here on the high ground than in the mud. "We'll stay," he decided. In the dawn there was a lull, but although the gunfire dwindled to an occasional crack and flash on the lower slope, yet Shaun could sense an increase of activity among the Boers. Ominous rustlings and the muted sounds of movement on his flanks confirmed his misgivings. But now it was too late to retreat on the river, for already the mountains were showing stark silhouettes against the dawn sky. They seemed very close, as close and unfriendly as the unseen multitude of the enemy waiting out there for the light to come. Shaun stood up.
"Take the gun,"
he whispered to the man beside him, as he relinquished the Maxim. All night he had fought with that wicked, clumsy weapon, and now his hands were claws shaped to the firing grips, and his shoulders ached intolerably. He flexed them as he moved down the line, stopping to chat with the men who lay belly down behind the schanz, trying to make his words of encouragement sound convincing. In their replies, he sensed the respect they were forming for him as a fighting man. It was more than respect, closer to a tolerant affection, the same feeling old General Buller had evoked among his men. He made mistakes. A lot of men died when he led, but they liked him and followed him cheerfully. Shaun reached the end of the line.
"How's it going?" he asked Saul softly. "Fair enough. Any sign of the old Boer? They're pretty close. We heard them talking a few minutes ago. My guess is they're as ready as we are."
"How's your ammunition?"
"We've got enough to finish this business."
To finish this business. That would be his decision. When the massacre began, how much must he make them endure before he called for quarter and they stood up with arms raised in the most shameful of all attitudes?
"You better get under cover, Shaun. Light's coming fast."
"Who the hell is looking after whom?" Shaun grinned at him. "I want no more heroics from you," he said, and walked quickly to his station on the other flank. The night lifted quickly from the land, and morning came as abruptly as it does only in Africa. The Boer lagers were gone. The Hotchkiss gun was gone. Shaun knew that the gun and the Boer horses had been moved back behind the new ridge, which now faced their position. He knew also that the rocky ground below him was crawling with the enemy, that they were on his flanks and probably in his rear as well. Slowly, the way a man looks at a place before he begins a long journey, Sean looked around him at the mountains and the sky and the valley. In the soft light, it was very beautiful. He looked down the gut of the valley towards the grass plains of the Highveld. His head jerked with surprise. He felt excitement lift the hair on his forearms. The mouth of the valley was blocked by a dark mass. In the uncertain light, it could have been a plantation of wattle trees, oblong and regular and black against the pale grass. But this plantation was moving, changing shape, elongating. Burnham Wood to Dunsinane. The first rays of the sun slanted in across the crest of the ridge and lit the lance heads into a thousand minute dazzles.
"Cavalry!" roared Sean. "By Jesus, look at them!"
The cry was taken up and thrown along the line. Yelling, cheering wildly, they fired down upon the tiny brown figures that were scurrying away to meet the Boer pickets who galloped in across the floor of the valley, each of them dragging a bunch of a dozen horses after him. Then, above the cheering and the gunfire, high above the sounds of hooves and the cries of panic, a bugle began to sing Bonnie Dundee. Sharp and clear and urgently it commanded the charge. Sean's rifles fell silent. The cheering faltered and stopped. One by one his men stood up to watch as the lines of lancers moved forward. Walk, trot, canter, gallop. The lance heads dropped. Belly high, they flitted like fireflies in front of the solid dark ranks, and that terrible thing swept down upon the tangle of men and frenzied struggling horses. Some of the Boers were up now, wheeling away, breaking like game before the beaters. "My God!" breathed Sean, tensing himself for the burst of sound as the charge struck home. But there was only the drum of hooves. No check, no distortion, as the dark squadrons drove through the Boers. Precisely they wheeled and came back, broken lances thrown aside, sabres unsheathed, bright and long. Sean watched a burgher dodging desperately as a lancer followed him, saw him turning at the last moment and crouching with his arms covering his head. The lancer stood in his stirrups and swung his sabre back-handed. The burgher dropped. Like a polo player, the trooper pivoted his horse and rode back over the Boer, leaning low out of the saddle to sabre him again as he knelt in the grass.
"Quarter!" growled Sean, then his voice rising shrilly in horror and disgust. "Give them quarter! For the love of God, give them quarter!"
But cavalry gives no quarter. They butchered with dispassionate parade-ground precision. Hack and cut, turn and trample, until the blades blurred redly, until the valley was strewn with the bodies of men wounded a dozen times. Sean tore his eyes away and saw the remains of Leroux's commando scattered into the broken ground where the big cavalry mounts could not follow. Sean sat down on a rock and bit the end off a cheroot. The rank smoke helped cleanse his mouth of the taste of victory. 2 days later, Sean led his column into Charlestown. The garrison cheered them, and Sean grinned as he watched his men react. Half an hour before, they had bumped along, hunched unhappily on their borrowed mounts. Now they sat erect and jaunty, eating the applause and liking the taste. Then the grin faded from Sean's face, as he saw how his band was depleted, and he looked back at the 15 crowded wagons that carried the wounded. If only I had put lookouts on the ridge.